Sure.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Monday, March 5th. Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen. Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Meyer. Nicholas.
Here.
Nutting.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Anderson.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Meyer.
Excuse.
29.
Here.
You're at the controls.
Thirty present.
Prayer by Reverend Veit.
I'd like to offer a prayer, a collect for sound government. Let us pray. O Lord our God, bless the leaders of this state, especially our senators. Give them courage, wisdom, and foresight. Help them to rely on your strength and to accept their responsibilities to their fellow citizens, that they may make wise decisions for the well-being of our society. And finally, may we all serve you faithfully in our generation and honor your holy name. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of March the 2nd, 2012, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Any objections? Being none, the report is adopted. Doctor for the day is Dr. Kim Broomfield from Cheyenne, and our nurses for the day are Kim Glasscock and Vianen Sturlagsen. Excuse me a little about that. And they're both from Castle Rock Hospital District. Thank you, nurses. We're so pleased to have you. On this day in history, in 1836, Samuel Colt manufactured the first pistol, and it was the .34 caliber. Maybe that was an anticipation of concealed carry. I don't know. Thought for the day. This comes from Will Rogers. Mr. Rogers said, there's no trick being a humorist when you have the whole government working for you. One other small, not a small item, one other item of interest. Jessica Grant, our page, was recognized in her hometown newspaper, read this weekend. She actually took third place of about 4,000 entries, third place in the Wyoming Wildlife Photo Contest. So it's quite an accomplishment. And I would say if there's any advantage for Jessica, given where she lives, she's got a distinct advantage in that she's got a lot to select from that really grand part of the world. So congratulations, Jessica. Messages from the House.
March the 2nd, 2012, from the House of Representatives. Concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 9, Unemployment Insurance Compliance, ayes 56, excused 4. House Bill 13, Wind Estate Disclosure, ayes 56, excused 4. House Bill 40, Optional Sales Use Tax Uses, ayes 47, noes 9, excused 4. And House Bill number 50, Insurance Fraud Prevention, ayes 54, noes 2, excused 4. March the 2nd, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 207, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill number 25, Private Transfer Fee Obligations. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 56, excused 4. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a light committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. March 2nd, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 210. Conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a light committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 25. The House conferees are Representative Stubson, Representatives Brown and Roscoe. March the 2nd, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 211. Conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 8. The House conferees are Representative Semlich, Chairman, Representatives Eklund and Teeters. March 2nd, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 212. Conferees appoint a Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a light committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 5. The House conferees are Representative Patton, Chairman, Representatives Botten and Byrd. March the 2nd, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 213. Conferees appoint a Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a light committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 1. The House conferees are Representative Berger, Chairman, Representative Ken Escobel, Representative Pedersen, Stewart, and Wallace. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
I believe we do have some concurrences. go ahead, Senator Cole.
Could I have privilege of the floor, please?
Go ahead, sir.
Members of the Senate, I had the great pleasure of serving with the really good senator from Albany County, and we've got a couple of guys now that are pretty good. Senator Vince Pickard, and I knew him for an awful long time, and it's my pleasure today to have on the floor Vince's wife, Kay, and her daughter, Lindy Lynn, who heads up the Senior Citizen Center in Shoshone, where the good Senator Bebout played basketball, and it was rumored that he was a great little dribbler. So with that, please help me in welcoming Kay and Lindy.
Welcome, and we hope we enjoy your day. And maybe you have to be a little patient with us. We get a little bit rough around the edges as we get closer to the end. Senator Schiffer, go ahead.
Mr. President,
your conference committee on Senate File 8, the ethanol tax, will meet at 1:30 up in S-14, the transportation, and we'll see what goes there.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, we have a concurrence report. Senator Burns, are you ready for message number 194, referring to Senate File 17?
Yes, Mr. President.
Go ahead.
Mr. President, I move concurrence.
We'd ask that be ready.
Oh, I'm sorry.
March 2nd, 2012, from the House of Representatives, message number 194, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file number 17, Game and Fish Authority Revision. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 43, no 16, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Go ahead, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on Senate file number 17, Game and Fish Authority Revisions. Mr. President, when the amendment came over back over from the other end of the Capitol building, the language was actually better than it and more defining and clearer than it had been in the bill in the first place. And so knowing it was coming from the House, I went and checked and found out the language wasn't theirs. It actually came from Game and Fish. And actually clarifies the purpose of the bill in the first place, so I ask the body to vote aye.
Motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 17. You've been asked to vote aye, and ask the Chief Clerk to call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich? Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Platern, President Anderson. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 17. I believe I have an appointment of a conference committee here. this is in reference to House Bill 25. Those members of the conference committee are as follows: Bebout, Scott, Perkins. Bebout, Scott, and Perkins. Signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act 17, original file, Senate File 4. Ask that be read in.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 17, being original Senate File 4, an act relating to registered agents.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 17, being original Senate File Number 4, I'm about to sign. Signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 18, original Senate File 6.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 18, being original Senate File 6, an act relating to county memorial hospitals.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 18, original Senate File 6. So signed. I'm about to sign in Senate Enrolled Act Number 19, original Senate File 32.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 19, being original Senate File 32, an act relating to workers' compensation.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Act Number 19, Original Senate File 32. So signed. Senate Enrolled Act 20, Original Senate File 33.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 20, being Original Senate File 33, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 20, Original Senate File 33. And so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 9, Original House Bill 4.
House Enrolled Act Number 9, being Original House Bill 4, an act relating to the Department of Transportation funding.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 9, Original House Bill Number 4. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 10, Original House Bill Number 5.
House Enrolled Act Number 10, being Original House Bill Number 5, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 10, Original House Bill 5. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 11, Original House Bill 15.
House Enrolled Act Number 11, being Original House Bill 15, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 11, Original House Bill Number 15. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 12, Original House Bill 16.
House Enrolled Act Number 12, being Original House Bill 16, and act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 12, Original House Bill 16. House Enrolled Act Number 13, Original House Bill 55.
House Enrolled Act Number 13, being Original House Bill 55, an act relating to secured transactions.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 13, Original House Bill 55. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 14, Original House Bill 66.
House Enrolled Act Number 14, Original House Bill 66, an act relating to industrial siding.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 14, Original House Bill 66. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 15, Original House Bill 72.
House Enrolled Act Number 15, being Original House Bill 72, an act relating to school districts.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 15, Original House Bill 72. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 16, Original House Bill Number 88.
House Enrolled Act Number 16, being Original House Bill 88, an act relating to motor vehicles.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 16, Original House Bill 88. So signed. House Enrolled Act 17, Original House Bill 9.
House Enrolled Act Number 17 being original House Bill Number 9, an act relating to unemployment insurance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 17, original House Bill 9. So signed. House Enrolled Act 18, original House Bill 13.
House Enrolled Act Number 18 being original House Bill 13, an act relating to property.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 18, original House Bill 13. So signed. House Enrolled Act 19, original House Bill 40.
House Enrolled Act Number 19 being original House Bill 40. An act relating to taxation and revenue.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 19, original House Bill 40. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 20, original House Bill Number 50.
House Enrolled Act Number 20, being original House Bill Number 50, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 20, original House Bill 50. So signed. Bill's on second reading. You may. Just a second. Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, in the balcony above the President, we have a group of students from Lingle Fort Laramie, and they're also attended by Kevin Derby and Mary Harshberger. Would you please help me welcome them to the Senate?
Welcome, students. We hope that you enjoy your day. House Bill 11, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 11, Business Entities Revision.
The new amendments. House Bill 11, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 17, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 17, Budget Hearings.
No amendments. House Bill 17, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 21, second reading of the House Bill.
Yeah. House Bill 21, Exceeding Speed Limit While Passing.
No amendments. No comments. House Bill 21, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 26, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 26, Contractor Residency Provisions.
There are no amendments. House Bill 26, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 27, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 27, Extension of Energy Producing States Coalition.
No amendments. House Bill 27, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 34, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 34, Subdivision, Consideration of Schools.
No amendments. House Bill 34, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 35, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 35, Notarial Certification of Business Entity Instrument.
There is an amendment. I believe that's the Nicholas Amendment. I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
House Bill 35, second reading, amendment number 1, page 1, line before line 1.
Senator Nicholas, would you like to speak to this amendment, please?
I got it here. This is on a second reading amendment?
This is second reading amendment number one to House Bill 35,
Thank
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading of number one to House Bill 35. My colleague from Casper switched our names in order, but this is pretty simple. The I'm always ready.
That's a lawyer's trick. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this does is that this goes to the notarial acts. The House had proposed a short form using a long form of the method of the notarial seals or notarial acts. And when we went back and looked at the statute, Mr. President, what you really see here is that back when we modified the statute a couple of years back, we forgot to provide that when you use the short form as it's set out, which is truly a short form, it shall be presumptive evidence that. And then if you look down below that section, it describes the things that that is presumptive evidence of, which includes the information that's in the long form. So we believe this keeps the short form intact and then makes sure that short form has the presumptive evidence or that has the presumptions that are we need by law. So we'd urge that you support this as a better solution to the problem.
Questions, comments in regard to the amendment?
Thanks.
Question being called in regard to second reading amendment number one, House Bill 35. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, House Bill 35, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 65, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 65, Bank Authorized Investments.
No amendments. House Bill 65, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 76, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 76, Resort Liquor Licenses.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none. House Bill 76, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 87, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 87, Mixed Martial Arts.
No amendments. Any discussion? House Bill 87, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 92, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 92, 9/11 Services Eligible Entities.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? House Bill 92, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Joint Resolution 12, second reading of the House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 12, United States Government Deficits.
There are no amendments. House Joint Resolution number 12, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the joint resolution be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bill's on third reading, final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list for us?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I move third reading consent list, which is follows. House Bill 2, Service of Process Fees. House Bill 22, Gold Star License Plates, Expanded Eligibility. House Bill 41, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. House Bill 54, Crime Victim Service Providers Reporting. And House Bill 90, Baseline Scientific Assessments.
Would anyone like any bills removed from the consent list? Seeing no one, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 2, House Bill 22, House Bill 41, House Bill 54, House Bill 90. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard,
aye.
Bebelt,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Cole,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquibel, Geis,
aye.
Pastor. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. House Bill 2, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 2, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 22, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 22, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 41, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes. House Bill 54, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 54, 30 ayes. House Bill 90, are there any changes? Closing vote. Schiffer, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 90, 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 2, House Bill 22, House Bill 41, House Bill 54, and House Bill 90 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. House Bill 38, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 38, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, Coal Valuation Industry Factors and Act Relating to Taxation of Coal. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Hines, would you like to speak to the bill, please?
Mr. President, according to rule, Senate Rule 13-2B, I move that House Bill 38 be recommitted to the Revenue Committee.
Thank you, Senator. Absent any objection, House Bill 38 is recommitted to committee number 3. Seeing no objection, that is so ordered. Consideration of bills on general file. Senator, or Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. I'd ask for Senator Perkins to approach the desk, please.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 31. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 31, sponsored by the Management Council, Obsolete Laws, an Act Relating to General Revision of Laws. It was referred to Committee number 12, Rules and Procedures. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hastert, Martin, Nicholas, and Ross. Senator Ross, Acting Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 31, Obsolete Laws. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a bill that is brought to you by Management Council. It is basically a three-part bill. Section 1 are provisions in the law that have been fully executed, and therefore there's changes that need to be made. That's on page 1. If you go through to page 4, then there are provisions which are now obsolete and are archaic references. That takes you through to page 14, which is section 2, which are incorrect citations or failure to update cross-reference provisions, Wyoming or internal citations. The reason that you have a green copy is that in the House the staff caught an additional error in 14.4.101, which dealt with homes for defective children. That should be home for children with developmental disabilities. I would urge your favorable consideration of this good little bill.
Thank you. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 31, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. House Bill 31 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution Number 3. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Joint Resolution 3, sponsored by Representative Botten. Resolution Parents' Rights, a joint resolution requesting Congress submit to the states a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution prohibiting the infringement of parents' rights. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Hicks, and Perkins. No, Senator Escobel, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that they do so with a favorable do pass recommendation of House Joint Resolution 3.
Thank you. Senator Dockstader, are you ready to explain the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Joint Resolution 3 is a resolution proposing a parents' rights to amend the U.S. Constitution. This bill is about parents' rights, members of the Senate. We're starting to see precedent where guaranteeing the rights of parents are becoming in doubt, and here are just a few examples. State governments, some of them around the country, are starting to give children the right to make medical decisions without parental notice. School boards are starting to become involved or directing education without direct response to the parents, not allowing the parents to become involved in what is being decided. Parents are beginning to be denied children's medical records. It's my understanding that our country is the only one in the world not to have yet ratified the United Nations Convention on Rights of the Child. There's tremendous pressure being brought upon our country to ratify that treaty. Our U.S. delegation from Wyoming is opposing it. This treaty is one of the most dangerous threats to the rights of American parents in regards to raising their children. I'll give you just a few examples. The treaty trumps all existing federal and state law under the Supremacy Clause in the United States Constitution, and it becomes the supreme law of the land. The treaty also requires us to enact laws enforcing the treaty within 2 years. But also, under this treaty, the U.S. becomes answerable to the U.N., specifically the U.N. Committee on the Rights of the Child, which is the sole and exclusive decision-maker about what is in the best interests of the child. The treaty also allows disputes between parents and children where they're required to go to tribunals for decisions. Under this treaty, state legislators would be required to follow the orders of the new federal bureaucracy, thus setting up separate state bureaucracies with new state rules and regulations. The new bureaucracies could crush the people and divide families. Members of the Senate, only a U.S. constitutional amendment can prevent the U.N. treaty from ripping our families apart. And here's some key points that I want to point out. The proposed Parents' Rights Amendment would prohibit any foreign laws or treaties from violating the rights of parents to raise their children and to decide what is in their best interest. The Parents' Rights Amendment would maintain the status quo that currently exists in Wyoming. The amendment would not render current state laws void on child neglect, child abuse, divorce, adoption, or the termination of parental rights regarding unfit parents. Members of the Senate, in summary, House Joint Resolution number 3 is requesting Congress to submit to the states a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution prohibiting the infringement of parents' rights. And it acknowledges the right of parents to direct the upbringing and the education of their children as a fundamental right protected by the Constitution of the United States and the state of Wyoming. I ask for your favorable support.
Thanks, Senator Doc Stater. Question. Ready for the... No, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, when you look at the U.S. Constitution, Article 5, on the means for amending the U.S. Constitution, it says, Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case, and it goes on to say how the states ratify the amendments. Mr. Chairman, I agree with the general sentiment in this resolution, but I want to make sure that there's nothing in this resolution that could be construed as a call for a constitutional convention on this subject, because those things have certain risks. And so I have a question for the sponsors and for the committee that heard this bill. Am I right in reading this one as not being able to be construed as a call for a convention?
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Doc Stater.
To the committee who heard the original bill, it's my understanding there is no call for a constitutional convention.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christian's motion, that when the committee hold rise to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Joint Resolution 3, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Joint Resolution 3 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 7. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Joint Resolution 7, sponsored by Representative Brechtel. Resolution Conscious Rights. A joint resolution requesting Congress and the President of the United States to reverse the policy of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services regarding health plan coverage of... It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Dockstader, Nutting, Scott, no, Senators Martin and Chipper, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Thank you. Further reading of the bill, Senator Scott, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 7 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman, but I would prefer to have the bill explained first, and then I will ask the standing committee amendment be read in. Well, with that, Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Hicks for an explanation of the joint resolution.
Thank you. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, it's with some intrepidation that I rise before you and a great level of sadness today to report that the Constitution of the United States of America is under attack. Let me describe to you the chain of events that have occurred in the last 2 months that jeopardizes our constitutional freedoms in this country. On January 20th, the Health and Human Services Department promulgated a regulation to implement a provision of Obamacare, a mandatory provision that goes against the First Amendment right. If you go back to our constitutional freedoms, it is the First Amendment to the Constitution, is the very first component that protects religious freedom in this country. Essentially, what this does is it reaffirms a rule that virtually all people in the United States will fall underneath the federal mandate of requiring contraception, several other abortive actions, and other provisions. What this effectively does is, whether it is opposed to your religious beliefs in this country, that you are going to be mandated to comply with this federal regulation. It threatens the very foundation of the freedoms that we are guaranteed to under the Constitution. What this resolution effectively tries to accomplish is ask for a repeal of this, petitioning the President of the United States and also Congress. I would tell you, we had a discussion last week on how timely some of these resolutions can be. In fact, this has already been debated in the halls of Congress and very narrowly failed last Thursday on a 48-51 vote in the United States Senate. But the Speaker of the House of Representatives has said it is the responsibility of Congress to ensure the freedoms guaranteed under the United States Constitution, and the House will be taking this up. So I would suggest, members, that if this resolution is timely, to send back to Congress at this point in time to show what the disposition of the state of Wyoming is. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for the standing committee amendment to be explained to this resolution.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Joint Resolution Number 7, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 12 through 14.
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment is consistent with the presentation you just heard on the bill, and what it seeks to do is to sharpen the focus of the joint resolution on the question of freedom of religion. We remove the second, third, and fourth of the whereas clauses and replace them by the ones you see here, which do focus in on the issue of freedom of religion. And we add a whereas that I think is very important, and I will read to you. This mandate sets a precedent that would allow for an opposite law forbidding the coverage of these items, thus denying faith with opposing views the free exercise of their religion. So it introduces that element of balance into this. It's not that we're for or against the substance of what the feds are proposing. It's that we think is unjust to impose it on religions that disagree with it. And there is, in the federal regulation, there is an exemption, but it is so narrowly drawn that it does not cover insurance provided for employees of religious schools and other religious institutions like hospitals. It takes care of the church employees, but doesn't recognize these churches have functions that are beyond the church itself. And, Mr. Chairman, I think the amendment does sharpen the focus of the joint resolution onto just the issue of the assault on the First Amendment right to the free exercise of religion. I urge its adoption.
Thanks, Senator Scott. We're on the amendment. Discussion. Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, looking at those lines 19, 20, 21, and 22, I'm trying to understand the practical implications of this. If this were indeed the stance that our federal government would take, and we would ask them to do that, it says would allow an opposite law forbidding the coverage of these items, thus denying faith with opposing views. So I'm assuming that if we agree with this, then would there be necessarily a religious nexus into providing coverage for these items? I mean, is that what we're saying? Because,
you're saying that you can't have a law that forbids it, that religious view should not be denied, I think is what you're saying in here. Maybe some clarification, because I thought the original language was clear enough. I'm trying to understand what this language does and how that's different.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, seeing no other discussion for my second time.
This is the Committee of the Whole, Senator Scott. So.
Okay, that's right. That's right. This is Committee of the Whole. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the thinking here is that if it is constitutional to force a church that has its school to provide items that are against that faith, and that's what the feds are seeking to do, it would also be constitutional for the federal government to say to a church that had a different point of view, no, you cannot. It is illegal to provide contraception. Because if you can infringe the First Amendment on one side, you can infringe it going the other way. And my church, for instance, in its organizations, it has a theological seminary, would insist on providing coverage for contraceptive items. That's the way our faith looks at things. And we want to defend the constitutional right of the churches that disagree with providing those to, in their institution, say we won't provide them, so that our constitutional right in our institutions can provide those very services because we do believe in them. So the constitutional freedom of religion protections cut both ways, and that's what that provision in the amendment is all about.
Thanks, Senator Scott. We're on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. For the discussion, are you ready for the question? All's in favor? Oh, thank you. I thought you were getting up and doing something else. Thank you. Senator Rothfuss.
I was escaping again, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I just have some questions about how far this goes and what the scope is supposed to be as far as the intent. Now, this is picking a narrow topic, but the intent, obviously, is to allow religious organizations to basically pick and choose what does and doesn't go into their insurance programs. So my curiosity is, if there's a religious group that, for example, chooses not to support mammograms or screening of different types of cancer or vaccinations, is that also going to be something that we're going to want to consider and to allow those to be left out of the insurance program? And in addition to that, what if there isn't a consensus among the community? What if a portion of the community of the religious organization actually wants to be covered, for example, for birth control and contraception, whereas perhaps the majority of that group doesn't? Do we go with the majority, or do we go with the clergy of the church organization, or whose First Amendment right are we trying to uphold through this? I mean, we're talking about a group plan here. We're not talking about an individual basis. So if this were to go forward and if this was to be taken seriously and not just, you know, distributed as a lot of these resolutions are distributed, what is the practical ramification or the practical plan for implementation of this type of policy in the real world? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. Now, we're on the amendment. We're on the amendment.
Yeah, that is.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question now or a comment. I guess one law that is universal across the world in every country is the law of unintended consequences. And as a good senator from Albany County mentioned, what are the unintended consequences? I think there's one faith that has very little faith in medical procedures or blood transfusions, and I just wonder what would be the unintended consequences in those type of situations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Escobel. We're on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, there is a faith, and you all know it's Christian Science, that objects to vaccines. And we routinely, legislatures all across this country, provide an exemption for that faith so they can follow the tenets of their own faith. And in terms of practical consequences, Mr. Chairman, each denomination has to work out for itself. That's their business, what they believe in, what they want their institutions to do. But as a practical matter, Mr. Chairman, the religious institutions are a small part of our society. Most of our society, most of the schools are public schools. Most of the hospitals are public schools, are public hospitals. Now, this argument isn't going to affect them one way or t'other. It's the specific religious institutions that are under assault, and that's where we want our focus. So, Mr. Chairman, I urge we adopt the amendment.
Thank you. Ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill or House Joint Resolution 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. All right. The Standing Committee number 1 is passed. We're back on the bill. Are we ready for this committee of the whole amendment, number 1? Senator Hicks.
I got to read it in.
Mr. Chairman, could we have the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution number 7 read in this time?
The reading clerk, please read the amendment.
House Joint Resolution 7, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, page 3 after line 18.
Thank you, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask to move and ask for favorable consideration of the body on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Joint number 7. If you allow me, I'll explain the amendment.
Floor is yours.
Members of the body, let me remind you that Wyoming is one of the 26 states that's now currently litigating the constitutionality of Obamacare.
Mr. Chairman, point of order, it's not Obamacare.
Hang on, Senator Hastert.
Triple Health Care Act.
Senator Hastert.
Use of property on the Senate floor.
Senator Hastert, please wait for me to turn your mic on. Thank you. What's your point of order, sir?
Just, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. It's just that this is typically used as a partisan reference towards it. It's Affordable Health Care Act that was passed by a bipartisan group of Congress, and it's Affordable Health Care Act. Use of proper names on the Senate floor is not usually allowed.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Senator Scott, you have a point of order also?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
I think we ought to allow free debate here in the Senate, and a number of us feel the official name for that act is fraudulent.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hicks, proceed at your own risk.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to extend an apology to my member, the senator from Sweetwater County. There was no offense meant. With that, I will move on with the fraudulent name of the Affordable Health Care Act, as pointed out from the good senator. Let me remind you, as we are one of the 26 states that are now participating in the litigation of the constitutionality of that act. What we now see is there's currently this, and this regulation that was promulgated underneath that act, there's currently 7 states in the United States that have already taken up and filed notice of a petition to sue on the constitutionality under the First Amendment under this particular act. What this resolution does, what this amendment to the resolution does is just add a new Section 4, request the Attorney General of the State of Wyoming to look at the litigation and the notice of intent at the other states and determine if this is something that the State of Wyoming may want to participate in. It just requests the AG to look at this because we are currently a litigant with the original Affordable Health Care Act. This is a rule that's promulgated underneath this. Members, I would tell you, the state is the bastion for protecting the Constitution. We represent the people of this state. I would ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment.
Senator Arthas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think this amendment is actually out of order from the standpoint that this is a joint resolution which is intended to do nothing. Whereas we have here an amendment that does something and actually commits resources to the state of Wyoming. This would require a piece of legislation, which is a very different thing than what we're talking about here as a joint resolution. So I'm fairly confident that this amendment cannot go into this resolution, Mr. Chairman.
Is your objection your mainness?
What's that?
Is your objection your mainness?
Let's get a rules committee look at this,
I need to rule on your objection first. I need to understand your objection. Your objection is it doesn't belong, but I'm not sure that we've got a Senate rule that says that it just doesn't belong. So I need to know what your objection is.
Then we'll call for it as not being germane to the resolution, and if that doesn't work, we'll call for a rules committee.
Okay. I find that the amendment is not germane. Would you like to appeal the ruling to the rules committee?
I'll be satisfied with that ruling.
Senator Hicks, ruled that you could probably appeal to the rules committee too if you wanted. On my ruling that your amendment is not germane.
Mr. Chairman, when I went back and I asked for our legislative service office to draft this up, that was the very first question that I asked. Is this germane to the bill? Because I knew this issue would be raised. And after reviewing it, they said, we believe that it's germane and it can be tacked on. In response to the good senator from... Yes, sir.
The only question is, would you like to appeal the ruling of the chair?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to appeal that ruling.
Okay, then we'll...
And ask for a convention of the Rules Committee.
Convening. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you like to take charge of the Rules Committee?
Mr. Chairman, the Senate will stand at ease and pending a ruling by the Rules Committee.
Thank you. We'll stand at ease for the Rules Committee will meet in the President's office.
Yes.
that'd probably be easier than we spend probably years.
No problem. I'll print it. Not exactly. It's not as pretty as a problem, but...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, they did.
I thought you would.
On this one, committee of the whole is speaking politically.
Yeah.
I kind of statement about the medicinal purposes of Trump's. I try to keep my mouth shut.
That's probably not.
Medicinal purpose.
My daughter owns a bunch of.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, you can.
No, but I'm just thinking, is there an argument?
I don't know. It's up to you. Just a moment. We got it. Okay. Huh?
The committee of the whole come back to order. We've had a ruling from the Rules Committee, and I don't quite understand it, so we'll call on the good Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Rules Committee voted to, in a sense, overrule your finding on the following basis. This is a House joint resolution. It's not a bill. It's not a law. When you go to look at the Constitution says that bills and laws passed are required to have certain components, including you may not change its intent during the session. That is the issue of germaneness. So the objection that it's not germane applies to laws. This is neither a bill nor is it a law. And if you look at the issue with respect to what a law requires an enacting clause, if you look at the resolution, there is no enacting clause in a resolution. Enacting clause says, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. This would have no legal impact on the executive branch. If you want to say we want to persuade you, Mr. Attorney General, to take a position, you're free to do so. But there's no legal effect of this on the Attorney General. If he fails to conform or comply with the resolution, there's no impact because there's no law for him to enforce. It's simply persuasive at best. Now, if you will choose to use the same criteria that we judge laws by, and that is that you should not change the meaning, that's, you're free to, if you will, copy those techniques or those concepts when you consider this. Having said that, the reason for the ruling is that the issue of germaneness applies by Constitution to bills and laws. This is neither a bill or a law.
Okay, thank you, Senator Nicholas. We're back on the bill. We're back on the amendment. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a question for the Senate Vice President. and I understand what you said and it makes sense. What is the significance on a joint resolution when they have a fiscal note? Does that have any bearing on anything? Because I know this one does and most of them do. Yet if you're, what you're saying, it really is irrelevant because we cannot bind them on anything. So what would be the, what's the relevance of a fiscal note?
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
There is no, there is, you can only appropriate monies through a law. This bill can appropriate no law or more money, so in that respect, there is no binding effect. The Attorney General, this is simply persuasion that he do so, and he would have to do it within his budget that he's appropriated.
Thanks, Senator Nicholas. We're back. We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I would just ask the committee, vote your conscience, vote it up, vote it down. Whatever you think the right thing for the direction of the state of Wyoming is and for that I'd ask for a call for the question.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, Senator Burns.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on against the amendment. We had a resolution last year in which these legislature in so many words expressed its disfavor with I won't even name the legislation because no matter what I name it, somebody's going to be mad at me about it. But we know the piece of legislation we're talking about. It was passed through the House without anybody, very few people ever having read it. And so there are portions of it that are just now coming into the open, into the public. And this is one of them. And the problem, and we've already had the Attorney General in the state of Wyoming join a lawsuit about the legislation itself. The problem I have with this particular piece of this particular amendment is as other facets of the bill come forward and become public, are we going to then ask the Attorney General to look at the possibility of a lawsuit on every aspect of the bill? And so I would say let's vote this amendment down. The other thing to note is a note that was made by the one of the federal district judges in that when they passed this the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, one of the things they apparently intentionally did was they did not have a severability clause in there so that if any part of it was found to be unconstitutional, the rest could go forward. And most laws passed by Congress do have that. They intentionally left that out, and that's why that particular judge found the entire bill to be unconstitutional. So if any of it's found to be unconstitutional, theoretically, none of it should be constitutional.
Thanks, Senator Burns. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, folks. You know, the discipline that we have in looking at bills, while not constitutionally obligated with respect to resolutions, applies. And if you look back to the joint resolution, that is the requesting Congress and the President to reverse a specific policy for coverage on three different items. The additional issue raised by this describes now the Attorney General brings in a new entity, a new party, and then it also increases the breadth of the intended meaning to say that we should conduct a legal challenge to the constitutionality of the rules adopted by the United States. So now we're going not only to the constitutionality of the, it is the policy and it remains those policies that are challenged, so that may be, but it is much broader in scope than the three items. And it seems to me that if the sponsors want to have that broad impact, it is simply appropriate to demand and insist that they bring it in the first instance as it goes through the process. So while the concepts are not binding, they do apply, and it seems to me that there's a certain amount of discipline that ought to be adhered to. Joint resolutions should be thought out, and they should be you should apply those same disciplinary concepts.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Further discussion, are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hicks' motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate to House Joint Resolution 7, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has failed. We're back on the bill. Discussion on the bill, Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish to speak in support of the House Joint Resolution. Somehow we get confused between health care access and health insurance access, so that it begins to sound like you either have to support religious freedom or you have to support women's access to contraception. And that isn't the case. This is just about health insurance, not health access. There's lots of avenues by which women can access contraception. This just deals with who pays for it or who is mandated to pay for it. Freedom of religion dictates or allows each person has the right to make their own decisions related to moral issues. It does not compel someone to pay for somebody else's moral decisions. I also want to talk a little bit about oral contraceptives, because there are claims being made that the value of oral contraceptives is so overwhelming that it's worth our sacrificing some religious freedom. And many of those claims are not supported. One of them is that oral contraception decreases the need for abortion. Oral contraceptives became generally available to the public in the 1960s. Abortion has only increased since then. There isn't any historical evidence that oral contraceptives decreases abortion rates. The claim is also made that teen pregnancies are decreased by the use of oral contraceptives. History also does not support that. There are more teen pregnancies now than there were before oral contraceptives. Another point is that there are some diseases or some illnesses that mandate that we must have oral contraceptives available. One of those is polycystic ovarian disease. That's a disease that has an unknown cause. One of the potential causes is diabetes or insulin resistance. Another potential cause is oral contraceptives, especially when started at a young age. So that while oral contraceptives are used to treat polycystic ovarian disease, they may indeed be the cause, especially for someone who may be using them over a long period of time, which would be those young women who start them at a very young age. Another claim that's made is that contraceptives save lives. It could also be argued that they take lives. Some of the warnings against taking oral contraceptives include strokes. There's some evidence that they increase the incidence of strokes. Seems like there was another thing that has left my mind right now. So to not digress with that. But another disadvantage of the ruling that any group must provide insurance to pay for contraceptives is that that creates another insurance mandate. It was asked on the floor today, should we allow people to pick and choose about what health insurance covers? I think that would be an excellent thing. That people could choose the kind of health insurance that fits their needs. the more mandates we have, the more expensive health insurance, and the less choice there is. So that we're moving to there's one kind of health insurance that has to fit all needs, and we're moving toward having less and less choice. House Joint Resolution 7 helps to support that choice in what kind of health insurance people have. Just as kind of a last thing, another claim is that women need oral contraceptives in order to be successful in a career. I have intimate information that that is not true. Women can be successful in a career without oral contraceptives. So, men, I think you can vote for this resolution and not feel like you are in any way doing anything negative toward the women you love. I urge you to vote for this resolution.
Thank you, Senator Nutting. Ready for the question? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I rise reluctantly on this. However, we've heard some statements made, and I won't oppose those, but I'll share my history, and I think I have to. Years ago, as a young father, my wife came to me and said, "We need contraception for our daughter." That was alarming, my first daughter, and of course, my first answer was why. And then she went into the medical reasons for that. And I rapidly found that I not only didn't have the understanding or the background of what was going on with those challenges and those problems to a teenage girl, but to be honest, I was fairly uncomfortable about it and didn't really want to talk about it either. So we went along. But it was as a result of medical advice and a need, and it made a difference. I'm not going to talk about the moral parts of it, about the religious aspect, but just the medical aspect. And it did serve a purpose in our family and for someone I love. And it was purely medical. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let me make it very clear that on a religious, theological grounds, I couldn't disagree more with the organization that wants not to cover these services. However, that's not the issue. They aren't preventing anybody from getting them. These things are widely available. They're not unreasonable in cost. They can be had. But I'm in favor of this joint resolution because whereas I disagree with that organization on a religious basis, I think under our Constitution, when they are compelled to pay for those services that they morally disagree with, they are being denied the free exercise of their religion. And I think that's what this is all about, and I would urge the Senate to adopt the joint resolution.
Thanks, Senator Scott. For discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, very quickly, one last thing. As I said before, this all emanates from that one piece of big legislation that came up, and we could end up, as different parts of it come forward, we could end up spending an entire session debating resolutions for or against different aspects of that bill. One of the problems I have with this particular resolution is if we don't like this particular aspect of it and we vote aye on this resolution, are we then frankly endorsing the other and recognizing the rest of the legislation and saying, well, we don't like this rule, but we do like this part of the legislation? And so I'm going to reluctantly be a no vote on this. Simply for that reason. We've already voted on the original legislation itself and the emanations coming out from it are frankly no better, and I would I really don't want to waste any more of the Senate's time on these sort of things.
Thanks, Senator Burns. Ready for the question? All's in favor of Senator Scott's motion that in the committee whole rises report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Joint Resolution 7, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Joint Resolution 7 has passed committee of the whole. Division being called for, all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. As I said, House Joint Resolution 7 has passed committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 46. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 46, sponsored by Representative Varnish, Handicap Parking Space Size and Marking, an act relating to handicap parking. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Schiffer, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 46, Handicap Parking, Space, Size, and Marking. And Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment which I would ask to be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 46, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 14.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to deal with the Standing Committee Amendment and then yield the floor to the sponsor. What the Standing Committee Amendment does, it...
Senator Schiffer, will you please go ahead and move it?
Did I not move it? I want to move it.
This
I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 46. What this does, it adds a little bit of clarification, some words that needed to be included, particularly signage and then it deletes areas and puts in the word markings, which is a technical term for marking the pavement. And I would ask for a favorable vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question on the amendment. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to yield the floor to the good senator from the energy capital of the world and let him carry his great little bill.
Thank you. I'm not sure who that is, but we'll go to Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll explain the energy part later. This is a good little bill called House Bill 46. All this does is on the second page adds that language to include signage and any crosshatched handicap vehicle marking areas that may be adjacent to the handicap parking spaces. And all of you know of handicap vehicles that have wheelchair ramps to them or people in using walkers, and then somebody says, well, I'm not in the handicap parking, but they're 6 inches away from their vehicle, where there's clear evidence of these hatch marks painted on the pavement to allow that 2 or 3 feet for them to get by. All it does is include that into that space that was called the handicap parking. I ask for your favorable vote on House Bill 46.
Thank you. This question on, are you ready for the question on House Bill 46? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when House Bill 40, that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 46, say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 46 has passed committee of the whole. Senator Landon.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 51. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 51, sponsored by Representative Madden, Industrial Siding Impact Payments, an act relating to impact assistance payments.
You've heard the reading
It was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Emmerich, Hines. No, Senator Perkins. Excuse, Senator Barnard, Senator Hines, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, Von Flader, and Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 51. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask that it be read in at this time.
House Bill 51, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 4, line 19.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll yield to the co-sponsor to explain the bill and the amendment. Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, a little bit of background on the industrial siding payments. And that's what this goes to. Always before, industrial siding payments were made out of the... What they did is when the project reached that threshold, the $196 million. Everybody got... All the affected communities got together. The Industrial Siding Council said, all right, we'll go back 12 months and look at sales and use taxes. Whatever the change is from there as the project went forward, that's what funded the impact statements. It had the amount was first not relevant to what the impacts actually were. It was tied to what the sales and use taxes were. The second thing is that it didn't identify a starting place and an ending place. The two were not tied together with the actual impacts. And the third thing was that this happened frequently, you could have, if, for example, if it was a booming community and your sales and use taxes were already up for the previous 12 months, there would be no visible impact. On one of these, and this was a major industrial development, the total for the impact statement, and it impacted both counties and towns, the total difference in that sales and use tax was $6,600. That's possible to happen. In another one, in a different community, the impact was $1.3 million because of the economic activity within that area. The payments... In other words, the impact didn't correlate. They weren't tied with what was actually happening on the ground. What we've tried to do with this bill is to say, okay, Industrial Council, hold your hearings, and these are formal hearings. Bring in the parties, including the permittee and the impacted communities, and let's see what the impacts really truly are. And then we'll address those impacts in a timely manner. And that's what the bill does. Mr. Chairman, and let me go to the applicable part. Over on page 2, it directs the Industrial Siding Council to look at the anticipated impacts with the communities involved. The permittee puts up, and I'm over on page 3, we increased that amount because this is going to involve some real study and particularly probably a longer hearing process. So we changed the payment from $100,000 to $125,000. And understand, when you hold one of these formal hearings, they bring in economists, they bring in people who know about what happens to either the city or the county, the demands that they get on them. It's a first-class situation there. Then over on page 4, down at the bottom, it's where it starts. We get in to exactly what's going to happen. And that's where the permittee, which is the people building, the, creating the impact, and the cities and counties that are going to be affected, come in and provide evidence at the public hearing, again, a formal hearing, of the mitigated and unmitigated impacts that the construction will have. In other words, we're tying the payments to verifiable impacts. It goes on, the Industrial Siting Council will review the evidence of the impacts, applying a preponderance of evidence standard. I'm on the top of page 5, line 1. In other words, preponderance of evidence, you can't just kind of drive by and say, well, we're going to have more traffic. No, that's you're not going to get it then. You're going to have to demonstrate with a preponderance of evidence that what you're asking for is both legitimate and applies to this project. And then they determine a dollar amount. And it'll be the whatever the total dollar amount is, they're going to say, all right, that's it. That's what it is, and this is the impacts that we've determined. And that's what gets distributed. In other words, for whether it's a city or a town or the county, that's what they're going to get. We go on, and I'm down on line 8, again on page 5. We wanted to set a cap on this. I mean, I make no mistake. I want everybody to understand this is a draw on the Wyoming Treasury. But we said, all right, so there's got to be a limit. Sky is not the limit, and there's got to be a limit. And the limit that we put on starts on page 5, line 8. Under no circumstances shall the impact assistance payment exceed 2.76% of the total estimated material cost of the facility, as those costs are determined by the council. Again, that's in the hearing process. They determine that. Quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, they determine those costs as they're going through right now. And we just said it's capped at that 2.76%. That really is the nuts and bolts of this bill. I believe it solves the problem of, are we really going to provide impact relief to our local communities? Are we really going to apply it in a method that makes sense, that's tied to the actual cost of the impact, and yet have a responsible system for determining that? Mr. Chairman, and I think we've somewhere here. Let's see. The standing committee amendment was moved, I believe, but we did not vote on it.
It was, Senator.
Okay. What it does, and I'm going to take up the standing committee amendment. What it does, and it's a good amendment, it comes back in and says, now look, you go through this process, formal hearing, establishing the amount, all that stuff. You can't use it as a back door to hold up a project. And that's the nuts and bolts of it, page 6, line 1, provided that the adjustment shall have no effect on the permittee. In the society we're in, some people would perhaps use this system to delay a project, saying, okay, we've got to go back to step one. No, we're saying this is a good process, and if it's going to go forward, it's going to go forward. You can't use the impact system to derail a project, not to delay it or somehow screw it up. So I'd ask for favorable consideration on the standing committee amendment, and I'll answer questions on the amendment, and then we'll take up the bill. I'd be happy to answer questions on it.
Question on the standing committee amendment to House Bill 51. All in favor of the standing committee amendment moved by Senator Hines, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That standing committee amendment to House Bill 51 has passed. We are now back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we have a little more discussion about the 2.76%? And, of course, under the ISA, that threshold is around $200 million, which means you're looking at, if you take a $200 million plant, typically the material cost would be between $50 and $100 million, which puts you between $1 and $2 million that you shall not exceed that amount. I'm just curious, how did you come up with 2.76? Were you looking at the $200 million? If you do some of the larger projects we'd like to see built in our state would be $2 billion, so that impact assistance could be $10 to $20 million. And I'm just curious how you came up with that as some discussion on the percentage.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer?
That's actually a very good question, and I'm not going to suggest to you that 2, 7, and 6 are my favorite numbers, but what they did, that we went back in looking at some historical data, and also remember, this is on the total material for the project. It seems that is a reasonable level to cap it out at. Is it going to make everybody happy? No. One of the things we discovered in impact statements, rarely do all of the political subdivisions get all the money they either want or need. But we had to set it somewhere, so it's not an unlimited draw on Wyoming's coffers. So that's how that number came up. I'm not going to present to you that it's fail-safe, but it seems reasonable. And if history is any indication, it will cover that. If it doesn't, I'm sure our neighbors in cities and counties will immediately make us very cognizant of that.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just for some clarification, I asked that same question this morning of some of the other sponsors, and the answer that I received from that is that 2.76% is the amount that the state receives from sales tax. And that's, according to one of the sponsors, well, that's where that number had come from, is that's the state's portion of any sales tax.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just a few words in terms of an endorsement for the bill. I think the bill is a good one. I think it's a necessary one. I will relay some experience that we had in a community near me. Two major projects going on. There had been a series of wind projects, and then there was a large wind project that came up at the same time as a major overhaul or pollution control project on a local power plant. Well, the point of it being was during that time on wind projects, there was a sales tax exemption. So it made any impact payment discussion outside the percentages kind of moot in the sense that that whole conversation just driven by those local sales tax. Well, but then on the same hand, you got a project in regard to a pollution control equipment upgrade, as I recall, about $600 million. So it would have qualified. But under the pollution control tax exemptions, that project would have been, was exempt to property tax, but was not exempt to sales tax. So simultaneously, two projects going on at the same time. Wind project with an exemption, but a major pollution overhaul without a sales tax exemption, so that was the money off of the pollution control project that drove the impact payments on the wind project, much to the pleasure of the local county, because it was kind of the serendipitous happy accident. Point being, it shows you the reason behind this legislation in regard to the, in many instances, total disconnect between whatever the sales tax receipts might have been and what was actually received. So given the description and the more objective way of applying these impact payments, I would just offer that as an example of what the disconnect can be and what actually happened. Like I said, the one project drove heavily the impact payments on another project, and there was really not much relationship between the two. Thank you.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess what I would like to do is ask more about the fiscal impact of the bill and what happens going forward compared to what's happened in the past. And I may be wrong, but my recollection goes something like this, is that when we began the Industrial Siting Act years ago in the 80s, the idea was that we would, for these large projects, impose industrial siting fees on the applicant, that is, the industry that came in. And for a period of time, there were hearings that if you want to be a billion-dollar plant coming to the state, the community would actually negotiate with those large entities what the fiscal impact of it would be, whether it would be a need for another school, things like that, and there would be a discussion and oftentimes an imposition of a fee against the private party or the applicant to pay. And over time, that was changed, so it was negotiated then that the fee would be removed from the private party, but we would impose the same Siting Act requirements, and we would pay these siting payments out of our state share of collected sales tax. And as we see through some of these, the number of these bills today, it's simply a mechanism then, becomes a mechanism for those counties that have these large impacts to get the first dollar out of all sales tax are collected. And ironically, we should circulate for a second reading the payments so you could see where these industrial siting payments go. They're large amounts. And when I say ironically, for the past 8 or 9 years that I've watched these, you're talking about $8 to $10 million of impact assistance going to the largest, wealthiest county in the state because they have the impacts. And that county is receiving an enormous amount difference per capita. And do they have impact? Certainly they do. But we're building the schools now. We're paying for the schools. The state is paying for a lot of the things that are really driving these impacts. And when you have the largest, the wealthiest counties receiving another $10 million out of the first dollars collected of your sales tax, and it's simply a mechanism to say, well, notwithstanding that we have the largest per capita payments and we have the ability to take care of these impacts ourselves, we'd like to have the first dollars, and then you could share what's left. So the question is are we creating more money that's going to now go to some of these communities that have the largest assessed valuation to begin with, and so other communities are going to see less revenue because the large communities are making more, or are we capping it so there's going to be fewer payments?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, thank my colleague from the Mother County for coming up with a good basis for the 2.76%. He's absolutely correct. That's where it came from. Let me deal with my colleague from Albany County's concerns. And in terms of the fees, the only fee is that it was $100,000, we moved it to $125,000. That's a fee on the permittee. And that's to hold the hearings, gather the information, all that stuff they do. But in terms of the payments, the philosophy behind the Industrial Siting Council, there's nothing in that statute that is meant to be an income equalizer such as we put in the budget now, every year in the budget. we put in a distribution that's weighted to send more money to the poorer counties and less money to the more wealthy counties. That's the way it's computed. To the poorer towns, the smaller towns, and money to the more wealthy towns. That's the way we try and take care of that aspect of the what is a fact for Wyoming is we have a few areas of the state that are extremely strong economically and some areas that are not. That has nothing to do with the industrial siting process. What this bill tries to address in some logical fashion, whether you're wealthy or not wealthy, or whether this is your first development, or whether this is compounding, as Mr. President pointed out, and that can happen, that we're going to at least help our cities, towns, and counties when one of these big projects come in, and we're going to try and do it somewhat rationally, that if you've got an impact, you don't care what your wealth was, going into this, you'll still have to take care of those impacts. And it has nothing to do with wealthy or poor. It's tying the impacts to the actual what's happening geographically, whether it's in, again, the energy capital of the world, or whether it's happening in the poorest county in this state. We want to take care of that. I hope we don't tie the two together, because there's it can move. And let me just, we're all well aware in the last couple of years, wind farms. Wind farms are actually going into some areas that up until now have been basically just agriculture, not our wealthy neighbors, our less than wealthy neighbors, good neighbors, but not wealthy. Wind farms are going into those areas now. That's going to change the way the wealth versus not quite so wealthy counties or communities. So this stuff changes. But the industrial siting is to take care of a totally different problem. And that's what happens when a big project comes in and threatens the infrastructure, the level of services, safety, health, all those things. That's what it's meant to take care of. And what this bill tries to do is tie the impacts with how much money the community gets rather than the sales and use tax from the previous 12 months. I hope that's answered your concern.
Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to cut off the debate here, but there are some committees that have some hearings and stuff that have to be accomplished at this point in time. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee hold, beg leave to rise and sit again.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion is passed.
Mr. Majority, floor leader, I believe that clears the desk for now, at least.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Announcement, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet as soon as we can up in room 302 to conduct hearings on the governor's appointments. And also, Mr. President, we will be meeting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room H18 with our counterparts over in the House to discuss interim topics.
Senator Geist.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet at 12:30 to discuss the interim topics.
Other announcements? Go ahead, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, there'll be a conference committee on Senate File 5 at 1:15 today, and that is the... I don't see the name here, Mr. President, but it's the one dealing with removal of trustees and boards by county commissioners. And it's Senate File 5. We'll have a conference committee at 1:15 today.
That was the three C's, I think, on the...
That is Case, Coe, and Cooper. That's correct. Very good memory. There's also your committee number 7 will meet tomorrow afternoon at 12 p.m. in House 18 to discuss interim topics with our good friends down on that side. We'll also meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. up in our regular room to have a interview with the proposed nominee, Thomas Hersig, Director for the Department of Insurance.
Senator Nicholas, did you have an announcement for us?
Mr. President, I do. The conference committees for the budget, as well as House Bill 121, will meet at 1. I don't see in the 121 are Senators Cohen and Bebout. But so the Bebout, and we'll meet at 1 o'clock or following the leadership meeting. So if somebody sees Senator Bebout, if they capture him before he leaves. Thank you.
Senator Cole, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. President, just draw attention to the presentation today on adjournment from Silverback Learning. That'll be up in 302 for those that'd like to attend, particularly Education Committee. Thank you.
Okay, any other announcements? Senators, it looks like we're lining up on a Wednesday upon adjournment date for that Management Council meeting that would address those interim topics. And just so you know, FYI. Seeing no other announcements, you've all heard the motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Senate shall be at recess until 2 p.m. We are at recess.